What's up, everybody? Nate Lurie back with a special episode of We're the Inspiration. The last episode in July is not only going to be released on the anniversary of when the Americans with Disabilities Act was enacted, but it's going to feature a lot about Disability Pride Month. And I got my good friend Steve Ray with me, but he's not this week's guest. He actually got the guest for us, with whom we're going to talk a lot about Disability Pride Month, and Steve is going to tell you who that is in just a bit. When we talk about Disability Pride Month, we've been talking about it off and on for a while because neither one of us had heard about it really before the beginning of this month.
Really, ever. And it's only a year or two old. Luckily, a great article that you sent me the link to, written by a fellow named Ed Tobias, who will be on this show in just a little bit.
Yes.
He wrote a great op-ed piece about New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio declaring July Disability Pride Month. I don't want to get into the specifics too much because we'll have that conversation with Ed. But a lot of people don't know. Our community is probably aware of it. There is already a Disability Awareness Month in October every year. So it seemed like de Blasio pulled one out of the Department of Redundancy Department to come up with this second month, and we'll dive into that.
I was going to dive into that later, but let's begin with that because it's so confusing. It seems like every disability has its own awareness month, but you just said that Disability Awareness Month was in October. That's actually not true. That's Disability Employment Awareness Month.
Oh, that's true.
Disability Awareness Month. Disability Awareness Month, depending on who you ask, is actually in March. But there are some that say, and both are on the internet, so you know you can do your own search and find out that I know what I'm talking about. There are some that say that Disability Awareness Month is March, but there are others that say that March is actually Developmental Disability Awareness Month.
You know what it comes down to, Nate? It comes down to the difference between me typing "We Are the Inspiration" as opposed to the show name, which is "We're the Inspiration."
You're not the first to have done that.
And I am the first and only three-time guest on this show so far.
Well, no. So, no, there have been a couple other three-time guests.
Yeah, but they were on the show called We Are the...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just kidding.
No.
Just kidding.
No, I actually got a text from the mother of somebody that was on the show before, just a few weeks ago, and she said the same thing to me. She was like, I can't find the show on iTunes. Apple Podcasts now, I guess, but...
Right.
I can't find the show on iTunes. It's We Are the Inspiration, right? I said, no, it's We're.
Yeah. See, that's what happens when people actually look at our posts and don't realize the link is in the post.
Yeah.
All you have to do is click on it. I know we're going to get to Ed Tobias and Disability Pride Month.
Yes.
But I wanted to bring up something that is very newsworthy because this date that we are airing the podcast on, the 26th, is right in the middle of the Olympics and the Paralympics. There is a Paralympic swimmer who is a six-time Paralympic medalist by the name of Becca Myers in Maryland who will miss the Tokyo Paralympics because she is being denied her personal care assistant, who happens to be her mother, to be allowed to come to the Summer Games. And she's deaf and blind. She posted on social media that this essentially is the end of her Paralympic career. And she was not only denied her PCA, her personal care assistant or aide, as a reasonable and essential accommodation, but it was done by the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, even though the committee has blamed it on the Japanese government in terms of their COVID-19 restrictions. And now we've come to find out through an article in the Washington Post, her father had contacted the Maryland Secretary of State and the Japanese government, including the ambassador here in D.C. And the Japanese government said straight up, it's not the government, it's not the Tokyo Organizing Committee, it is the USOPC, the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, that is blocking this. So what you are finding, and this is unbelievable, there are 33 swimmers on the U.S. Paralympic team, 9 of whom are visually impaired. They are also being denied their own PCA because there is only going to be a single PCA on staff that is available for 17 individual athletes who would be in Tokyo for the Olympics.
Oh, that's terrible.
I find this to be disgraceful. I find it to be unfathomable that the U.S. OPC would deny an essential accommodation. This wonderful woman, Becca Myers, again, is her name, a 6-time medalist. She's 26 years old and said that this has essentially brought to an end her Paralympic career. She brought home 3 gold medals at the 2016 Rio Olympics. And that's with dealing with Usher syndrome, which, for those who don't know, affects both hearing and vision. So you need someone, especially in these foreign venues, to help them navigate, to help them get to their pool deck or wherever their field of play is, their athlete check-in, which is always high security, even down to finding out where, as an athlete, they're able to eat. You know, because sometimes, depending on where the Paralympics and Olympics are held, the athletes are required to stay in the Olympic Village and not leave the venue. So it's the biggest support they can provide an athlete. It makes them feel at home. And this just kills me to learn that this very talented young lady has essentially had the door slammed on her Paralympic career by the Olympic Committee here in the U.S. itself. Makes no damn sense at all.
Just look at the description that they're giving to her mother. Personal care assistant.
Exactly. A PCA.
Look at the first word there. Personal.
Personal. Yeah.
That means, despite the fact that she's her mother, she knows exactly what this young woman needs. And
exactly.
You're going to tell me that you can get the same care for 17 different athletes from one person. How impersonal can you get?
Even if you broke it down to just that individual sport, 1 for 9 swimmers.
Oh my gosh.
What the hell are they thinking? And pardon me, I know that our platform has changed since the original show, but this makes me want to curse up a storm.
Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around how this decision was made and who the hell is directly responsible for this, especially in light of the fact that the Japanese government and the ambassador here in D.C. said quite clearly, we have no issue with this. This is not our decision.
Well, we're going to have to keep an eye on updates for this because...
Exactly.
I would say get her on the show, but if she's deaf and blind, I don't know if
she... Doesn't mean she can't speak.
We got to find out if she can.
I will reach out to her father, and we will see if we can book a future episode. I think that would be very healthy to do, as always, to get it from the direct source,
yeah,
as we like to do.
I agree.
And speaking of that, since today is the 31st anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act, we will dive into that. A proposed piece of legislation that's been introduced in the Senate to upgrade the compensation that those with disabilities have. But I want to bring in our guest, Ed Tobias, who wrote a great article about Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, declaring July Disability Pride Month. Nate, as promised earlier in the podcast, we have a special guest who wrote an excellent op-ed piece on New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio declaring July Disability Pride Month. He is a former longtime anchor and reporter for the Associated Press and former vice president of news and information for All News WTOP Radio and WASH-FM here in D.C. And he is now a patient communicator and contributor to the MS Wire for those with multiple sclerosis. Welcome, Ed Tobias. Ed, how are you, sir?
Thank you, Steve. Very well, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to join us. We are both proof that there is life after WTOP.
All of us, yep.
Nate was the one who brought this to our attention. Can you, Nate, give a brief background as to how you came across Ed's piece?
So basically, at the beginning of this month, I had seen a Facebook post on my feed that said, Happy Disability Pride Month. And I'd never heard of it. And Steve and I talked about that earlier. Neither one of us had ever heard of it. So I just wanted to, especially since we were just at the end of another Pride Month, wanted to make sure Disability Pride Month was a real thing. So I did a Google search and nothing really stood out except this one article that was headlined by July is Disability Pride Month, but it's not for me.
Ed, can you start by telling us what the impetus was that caused you to write this op-ed piece on Mayor de Blasio's declaration?
It wasn't necessarily on de Blasio's declaration, but the general concept of Pride Months, whether it's a general disability Pride Month or a multiple sclerosis Pride Month. I have a problem with the concept. If you do a Google search just for Pride Months or medical Pride Months, I did one the other day just before this podcast, and I came up in May, for example. May is Arthritis Pride Month, Hepatitis Pride Month, Asthma, Celiac Disease, Osteoporosis Pride Month, High Blood Pressure Pride Month, Stroke, Skin Cancer Pride Month. Then there are Pride Weeks and Pride Days.
And that's just in one month.
That's just in one month.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow.
And that's just within the illness area. I'm sure there's Peanut Butter Pride Month and Cookie Pride Month. And I know there's Ice Cream Awareness Month.
I wave the ice cream pride flag myself.
It all gets lost in the pride fog.
It goes to this point that I was making to Nate earlier and off air. Since the word pride is mostly or usually used for racial, ethnic, and sexual orientation awareness, do you think mislabeling is part of the problem here?
Partially. I'm proud of the way I handled my disability. I'm not proud of my disability. There's a little difference there, but I think there are more productive ways than having a month that's likely to be ignored by a lot of people to make people aware of disabilities. I think it can better be done as an individual thing rather than a group thing. And I think there are better media ways to handle disability awareness than having a month for that particular disability or all disabilities. For example, there is a wonderful film documentary called Crip Camp available on YouTube. It was put up for an Oscar this past year.
Wow.
And it is a documentary about a summer type camp out in the boonies somewhere, which is designed for people with disabilities. And I'm not talking about kids. I'm talking about basically young adults and up. It's run by people with disabilities. It's for people with disabilities. It's people understanding people with disabilities, enjoying themselves with people with disabilities, I've never been one for disability groups, but when I watched this, it's about a 20 or 30 minute documentary, Crip Camp, I associated with disabilities probably for the first time in the 40 years since I've been diagnosed with MS. And that's the type of activity that I would like to see, making people aware of various disabilities.
A week or so ago, as we were planning this episode, Nate had posted on Facebook asking the disabled community that he knows, mostly a circle of spina bifida folks, to give feedback on this Pride Month. And the majority of it was negative for various reasons. What was your response when your article was first released, and even now to this day?
I had a very good response. People, as you mentioned, have a problem with the word pride. They have suggested different words. I don't remember them off the top of my head now.
Yeah.
But they thought that, yes, the original concept, the disability pride march that was held in Boston back in 1990, started the concept of disability pride months or celebrations. And that first march to make people aware that, hey, we're out there, we have different forms. Some of us may have our disabilities visible or more visible than others, but we're out there. And that served its purpose. The news media paid attention to it. The cameras were there, the microphones were there, the pads and pencils were there. But okay, it was unique. Once it stopped being unique, then it lost its impact.
Do you think, because there's a subset within our community of those who have genetic disabilities versus accidental disabilities, and those who have, as we've said, visible and invisible disabilities, do you think within those subsets there are different attitudes? Because I think some of the feedback we got was, well, I was born without limbs, I don't wave my torso around as a sense of pride, or, hey, look at me, I was in a car accident, I'm prideful that I have to use crutches or a wheelchair, and, you know, the various subsets within all that. Do you think there's a different attitude as this so-called Pride Month is developing or more exposed?
No, I don't. I think that we are who we are.
Yeah.
And that may be from birth, or it may be from age 32, as was the case with me. But there is a difference in how people react to us. People react to me on my scooter, I think, differently than they would react to me if I was in a large wheelchair. I appear less disabled, and so I appear less scary, I think is the best word, to some people. In a survey that I took recently, I was asked if people are reluctant to speak with me, or reluctant to make eye contact, or to spend much time with me. And I'm fortunate in that that's not been the case. Now, it may be the way I approach my disability, maybe because I don't have, with the exception of the fact that I'm riding on a scooter and can't walk more than a few steps without a couple of canes, that I'm less threatening.
So it could be demeanor and personality that's kind of overriding the usual reaction, right?
It may have something to do with it. I think that people with invisible disabilities, and that's how MS generally starts. For the first 20 years or so that I had an MS diagnosis, you couldn't really tell that I had MS. When I was a WASH, well, I hadn't been diagnosed then. When I was a WTOP, you couldn't tell that I had MS. I was still playing tennis for several years after my diagnosis. It wasn't an immediate thing. So I had time to ease into it, and people who dealt with me had time to ease into it. But that works the opposite way as well. A lot of people with MS have trouble making friends, even family, aware that they have a fatigue level that's unlike anything that they understand. They may have trouble speaking, but not enough so you would notice it. They may have cognitive problems that you wouldn't notice. That's particularly difficult with an employer. How do you make an employer understand?
Not to interrupt, Ed, but to that point, is that also a sense of sometimes a personal difficulty in being able to ask an employer for a reasonable accommodation, like a special chair, a wider door, access of any kind?
Absolutely. I see that in comments to things that I've written all the time and in the Facebook pages that I skim through every day. First, people have trouble deciding whether to make their disability known when they're applying for a job. It's one thing if I'm going for an interview and I'm on my scooter, but when I applied for a job at Associated Press, should I make my disability known up front? Because you wouldn't be able to have known. And people are scared to do that. But if they don't do that, and then 2 years or 5 years down the road, the MS symptoms start to appear, they have a problem in asking for the accommodation because they didn't make the need known when they applied for the job. So it's a real quandary.
It is a quandary, and I'll tell a little personal story here myself. My car accident in May of 2004, I was already at WTOP working for the classical station that was associated with WTOP at the time, WGMS. And I was headed into work when the car accident happened. And for the first couple of months, I was in a wheelchair, so that was easy to see. And then to a heavier walker, and then to a quad cane and regular cane. But in the sense of some sort of recovery, I didn't need a cane as often. And now, as I have aged, I need one, perhaps two canes to be mobile and have a wheelchair on standby. And having left radio after about a 30-some year career, I do a lot of on-camera work and voiceover. And I am hesitant, even though there are supposedly measures in place for performers with disabilities under the union guidance, I'm very hesitant to even apply for some things where my on-camera presence means I have to move a lot, that I have to walk, that I have to do stairs, things of that nature. And I'm very much afraid of putting it out there that I am rated with a severe disability by SSDI, by Social Security Disability Insurance, because I think I would lose future work if I did that. I think maybe there's a need to awaken some people to the possibility that really we can do virtually anything except some extraordinary physical tasks that you can work around.
True,
you know?
True. But going back to the initial reason for this interview, and that's Pride Month.
Yeah.
How does a Pride Month or week or day accomplish that? I don't think it does.
I think you're right. So in that regard, I actually have two questions. One is kind of political in nature, and we don't have to address it if you don't feel up to it. But in Mayor de Blasio's creating this Pride Month in New York, is it just another government-style Department of Redundancy department? Or do you believe it's virtue signaling? And
well, that's an easy... let me answer that, and then you don't forget the second question.
No, I won't. I have it.
Okay. Because it's a simple answer to this question. And I think that his creating a disability pride anything was just a feel-good for de Blasio.
Okay.
And take out any name, any politician I could slot into that, or most I could slot into that. It makes them feel good. They think they're looking good. And it may get a couple of votes in the disability community, but 2 months later, it'll be forgotten.
All right, then. So the second question, and I think this is kind of important, and it puts a pretty good ribbon on this. So what do you believe the disabled community should do? Ignore this try to modify the purpose and name, or just embrace it as another month of awareness, since we already have, for some specific disabilities, March and October as very high profile awareness months.
For MS, there's a worldwide awareness month in October, I believe.
Right.
But in the United States, there is an awareness week in a different month. So,
wow. That must be very confusing to people, considering the speed in which a social media message can go out to everyone around the world, and you celebrate something that isn't so, it's like, you know.
But again, I think
Canadian on the 4th of July, it doesn't make any sense.
I think outside of the disability community, the month or week is ignored. Information about it goes out to the people who already know, and it doesn't get spread much further than that from my vantage point. What do we do? I think that individuals, we have the opportunity of the obligation as people with a disability. And let me just, as an aside, say, I don't believe I have a disability. I believe I have a handicap. A disability to me envisions a broken down car on the side of the highway that can't go any further. A handicap says, I have to have a couple of extra strokes in order to play this game. And maybe an extra stroke is a cane, or maybe it's a scooter. So I handle my handicap that way. I'm not disabled. I'm just a little not firing on all cylinders.
Limitation as opposed to a complete breakdown or lockout.
So what do? You go out, and as an individual, you make it known to the people who you deal with that you are handicapped but not disabled. You suck it up and you say, okay, when I'm applying for a job, I'm going to be right up front. And that's what I've always believed you should be with a potential employer, and say, here's what I have. Here's what the future may hold for me. Here's what I bring to your job. And so I'm going to tell you about my handicap right now. Same thing with family, same thing with friends. And if you want to do something, if you're aware of the special month or week, take that time and contact your lawmaker on Capitol Hill, locally, in the State House, and say, hey, I'm calling to let you know we're here, and we are as able as, or almost as able, as somebody who has no handicap at all. It's very small. It's not a big blown up with balloons and fireworks month or week, but I think you're listened to more on a one-to-one or on one-to-few basis than you are trying to celebrate a month to make your disability known to the world.
That is a brilliant observation, Ed. That really, the distinction,
thank you,
sir. I'm taking that to heart in terms of self-describing what's going on. I never thought about it that way until you brought it up. That's an excellent point. Nate, did you have some follow-up for Ed in the time we have with him?
Well, first of all, I think Ed really hit on something when he said that things like Disability Pride Month or whatever awareness or Pride Month or day or week that you can look up or know about is really not known in the community. I think he really hit on something when he said that. The general community.
Right.
But I think he really hit on something when he said that, when you realize that earlier in this episode, we both said we didn't know about Disability Pride Month before the beginning of this month.
That's true.
More people know about Ice Cream Pride Month or Ice Cream Awareness or something like that than Disability Pride.
I'm all in on that, believe me. They break it down to Rocky Road and Chocolate Chip Awareness Month. I'm in on that too.
What would the flag be for that? I'm not really sure.
I don't know, but it'll drip in the heat.
Right.
Whatever it is.
But you know, the other thing I wanted to bring up is I heard it a few times in this conversation, and also I think it was mentioned in Ed's article, as far as whether pride is even the right word. And I just wanted to say something about that Steve and I were talking a little bit off the air about. I am the only one on this panel that has had a lifelong disability. I have spina bifida, and, you know, you're born with that. But since I was a kid, I've never really felt like I received any hate for being disabled or being who I am. And I think that's the difference between the disabled and a lot of other minorities that have other Pride Months. Whereas a lot of disabled people are, if anything, the opposite happens, where people are nicer to you than they would be maybe if you didn't have a disability. And other minorities, just for being who they are, receive a lot of undue hate. Yes. And I feel like that's the reason that maybe we don't deserve a Pride Month as much as other minorities do.
Good point. Excellent point. Never thought of that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think to Ed's point about one-on-one personal education, and we've talked about this on previous episodes. I've been on now three times with Nate, that even the simple education about, as an example, not coming up behind someone in a wheelchair and beginning to push them without asking first, or offering aid that really isn't needed yet until a handicapped person actually asks for it. There's a lot of self-pride. And so that one-on-one education, I think, goes a lot further than, as Ed said, another pride for whatever ails you.
I have to tell you that my column that's just posting today on the Multiple Sclerosis News Today website is about asking for help. Something that I have not wanted to do for years and years and years, and my standard answer was, no, I'm fine, thanks. Right now, I've gotten to the point where, as I approach my 73rd birthday, I'm ready. The next time somebody comes and asks me if they can help me lift my only 35-pound scooter into the back of my SUV, I'm going to say, sure, thanks, I'd appreciate that.
I have a situation where, luckily, I have a patio-level apartment, but there is a slight hill to get up to the parking area. And so I use a flatbed pushcart and a bin to bring my groceries in. Oftentimes, someone will pull up behind me in the apartment complex and say, hey, do you need some help? And I have never asked for it. I use an excuse, well, no, I need to stretch my leg out, or no, I have it. And then I suffer greatly with the effects of having to go through lifting that up over the curb because they changed, and this is unbelievable, they changed the three handicap spaces to reserve parking to get out of constructing a ramp that goes up over a simple curb.
Well, it seems to me that any apartment complex or building needs to have X number of handicapped spots there. So go back at them. Don't stand for it.
I'm going for it, especially now that things have settled down. They went through three management companies in the past 10 years that I've been here, and now have a very reputable group finally managing the property. And that's the first thing I'm bringing up here at a tenant meeting, is you've got to put a ramp here, especially between my space and the woman next to me, who is using a very heavy duty walker now at her age, and is getting the beginnings of retinitis pigmentosis. So she needs that as much as I do. There's more than just a simple request here. It's an absolute necessity. So to go to that point about asking for help, if you would send me the link to that article in our LinkedIn conversation, I will make sure that when this episode is posted, as we release it on Monday the 26th, the 31st anniversary of the ADA, that people will be able to read that article as well, Ed.
Sure, great.
You got it. Ed, I can't thank you enough for your time. The insight was eye-opening to say the least. Considerations given to some situations and personal issues I don't think I had ever thought about before. And I think Nate agrees that this was time well spent. I can't thank you enough.
Absolutely. And Steve, I'm going to put you over a little bit here because I know that some people that don't know you are going to listen to this and wonder why you conducted most of this interview. First of all, Steve got Ed to be on the show. That was important. Second of all, he has a lot more experience interviewing people than I do. Most of mine is actually limited to this podcast. So I want to thank Steve for helping out. Also, I want to thank Ed for joining us. We're going to make sure that people that listen to this have access to his writings.
Thank you both. I appreciate the opportunity. An opportunity like this, I think, does a lot more to make people aware of what we're all about than any days, weeks, or months that are celebrated annually could possibly do.
That was great to have Ed Tobias on. That was very informative, and we had a great conversation about Disability Pride Month, and maybe someone will come up with a solution or a modification or whatever it's going to take to make that effort actually mean a little something. Speaking of that, since today is the 31st anniversary of the Americans with Disability Act, there has been a bill introduced in the Senate that could modify disability assistance, because one of the things that many who are disabled know is you have an unreasonably low asset limit, and it forces a lot of disabled people into poverty. And to tell someone with a disability, well, just saving cash so it doesn't show up in your account, that's encouraging disabled people to commit literally a felony, which is not a better solution than addressing the systemic oppression of those with a disability. There is currently a bill, as I said, on the House and Senate floor that could significantly increase the standard of living for disabled people in the U.S. No matter where you are on the earnings grid for Social Security disability, you have a cap of an additional average of $12,900 per year that you can earn on top of your disability if you're able to. Again, that's an average. The bill, which is on the floors now, in both the House and the Senate, it's called the SSI Restoration Act of 2021. It would raise the monthly disability income to at least the poverty level, which is a 30% increase. It's going to change the amount you can have saved from $2,000 to $10,000 as an individual. That's the first update in over 30 years. They're going to update outside income restrictions to about $400 a month without any benefit reduction. And here's part of this that I am really in favor of, because I've had to make decisions myself on certain relationships. This act would remove the marriage ban and promote marriage equality, essentially, not canceling or reducing your benefits if you get married. And along with that, it removes the penalties and reductions for receiving help from friends and family, like if somebody in your family buys you a meal, offers you housing, things of that nature. You get penalized for that in the review process. And some people have lost their benefits altogether because they received help from their family members. Isn't that where you should be able to go in the first place? And why hasn't a lot of this stuff been addressed in the past 30 to 35 years? On the anniversary of the ADA, I find it to be very short-sighted in terms of those in charge who need to take care of this constituency.
I don't know the most about SSI. I've never been on it.
Yeah.
But for the purposes of this show, I should know more about it than I really do. But I do know a lot of people that have been on it. And as things are or have been up until this bill, the only way that disabled people can really get the things they need is to not need SSI. Anyone who's heard you on the show before probably knows at least something about why you need to be on it, but you're an older example, and sad to say, there are a lot of younger disabled people that for whatever reason end up with similar problems to the ones you have, and it limits how much they can work, if they can at all, and they need that assistance.
True. Because of the cap, you are limited in what you can do, what you can buy, certain medical issues that cannot be addressed. And this is why. And as someone who is on SSDI, every 2 years or so in the review process, I have to show that I have not made an attempt to have medical treatment to get beyond my disability, as well as showing my income in addition to SSDI not going over certain limits. Luckily, I am at an age where I only have to wait another 2 years before my SSDI turns into regular Social Security, which lifts all of that earnings and other stuff. But for those who are much younger than I am, who depend on this, I have to wonder, why would you set the bar so low for a portion of the population that clearly needs things above and beyond what you can get at the poverty level in order to just subsist? You know, there may be special dietary needs. There may be regular medical needs that aren't covered by Medicaid or Medicare. There may be a plethora of things that come out of pocket that aren't affordable for those with certain disabilities or certain limitations. That's what really hacks me off about this, that for the past three decades, no one has taken that into consideration. And here's the way I phrase it to those who don't have disabilities or are outside the community. We don't get everything for free.
Right.
We do our best with a large amount of personal pride to accomplish a lot of things that most people don't expect us to accomplish. And we deal with issues for both visible and invisible disabilities that the, and I hate to use the word normal in this case, because I'm not trying to throw shade on us, but the normal population doesn't have to deal with, unless they are elderly or perhaps already in financial straits. You don't have any idea of what it takes to subsist day to day on just Social Security disability insurance and not be able to pursue certain fields of employment simply because they would pay too much. They would cancel your benefits, and you have to weigh one against the other. If I take this job, job X, that pays this amount above and beyond disability insurance, and that cancels your disability insurance, and then you lose that job, you're back in the same rut you were in before. It's very tough for a lot of people to leave that safety net. And on this anniversary of the ADA, I think that this House and Senate bill, the SSI Restoration Act of 2021, is something that has to be given a serious look at by, well, wherever you are on the political spectrum. This is not a political issue. This is a personal issue about quality of life.
Especially as I've gotten older, I feel very fortunate that I have decent insurance. And I think I've even said on the show that when I get a new wheelchair, which is now available to me every 5 years, my insurance company pays a large portion of that. And I did a portion of an episode about how the term special needs is sort of meaningless now.
Yeah.
But when it comes to things like this, I sort of understand that term.
Yeah.
Because you can break it down even within the disabled community and realize that when it comes to some of the larger things or more important things that people need, some are still better off than others.
Very true.
I remember years ago going to what they now call the Capital One Arena. You and I have been there for wrestling many times, and that might have been what this was. I don't remember. But I was sitting next to this guy who was also in a wheelchair, and it was taped together, literally. And I happened to ask him, how old is that chair? He said, 26 years old. And it sort of shows how jaded I am just by having decent insurance. When I asked him what I thought was a simple question of, why don't you get a new one? And I'm sort of surprised by the fact that his response was, can't afford it.
It's almost a class system within our category.
Right. And there are countries that would do something about that or have. And the United States is not one of them.
Which is surprising, since if you look at the overall picture in our history, the U.S. has been one of the most benevolent nations in the world, sending firefighters and police and first responders to natural disasters and emergencies all over the world, offering relief to countries in terms of medical care, mercy ships, oh, you name it. The list is long.
Yeah.
But again, why the hell aren't you doing more for your own people? If we are such a benevolent society, why aren't you doing more for those who need it the most? It blows my mind.
I don't want to chalk it up to apathy, you know. But
no, ignorance.
It's more ignorance than apathy, but I still think it's a combination. Because there are people, and I'm not even talking about people within the government, but there are people that are just apathetic toward those that are less fortunate than them.
Yeah.
And that's very really true. What we're talking about here.
That's true. This is a very strange example, but I think it works here. I've seen someone on social media declare that they have been diagnosed with breast cancer. And I come to look at their page the next day to see how they're doing, and I find they've lost 5 or 6 friends. What the hell is the matter with you people?
Really?
Honest to God truth. And it's someone who works or did work at a radio station that we're all familiar with. I will leave the call letters out only to allow her some privacy. But I just can't fathom how you can leave someone in that state, and I mean state of mind, state of body.
Right.
When that's the moment they need the most support, the most love, the most encouragement to fight the battle. I have said this 1,000 times. I am not a victim. I am a survivor. And the only way I did that is through the support and love of friends. You don't have to be close friends. You don't have to be longtime buddies like you and I are.
Right.
You just have to have some empathy for your fellow human beings and do the right thing. Clicking a little love symbol, sending a heart on social media, just reaching out even privately and saying, hey, if you need something, I'm here for you. That's a huge boost from a simple act. I think that what we've lost along the way here in the past 30, 31 years since the ADA was signed is a lack of understanding, because people look at the ADA and think, well, hey, everything's okay for you guys. You've got ramps, you've got elevators, you've got reasonable accommodations for anything you need in the workplace. You've got this and that, and it's all been handed to you with the ADA. And so, okay, on to the next issue, which is bull. You need to keep up with society and with the needs that weren't addressed with the original signing of the ADA. And I don't think anyone is taking that into consideration, or anyone who can do something about it. It, again, is one of those things where I feel we're in the shadows.
At the risk of either repeating or maybe even contradicting myself, despite something I just said, this is an example of why the term special needs and terms like that are now deemed meaningless. Again, it goes back to not apathy, but just ignorance, in the fact that there are people that believe that every disabled person has the exact same needs.
Yeah. You want to hear the latest term that I saw on Twitter that got blowback? I know you did an episode about terms
Yes.
for the disabled. This is one that blew my mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Able adjacent.
Oh my gosh.
Able adjacent or ability adjacent. Are you kidding me?
Oh God, that's awful.
But why don't you just push a wheelchair to the edge of the Grand Canyon and get ready for the stiff breeze to send somebody over the edge, right? Well, you're able adjacent. You got to see the canyon. Yeah, right. At what cost?
Make sure you turn them around before, you know, the breeze hits.
Yeah,
they'll exactly. go backwards.
Able adjacent. I'll say it one more time. Able adjacent. What the hell is the matter with you? Not you personally, but you people.
No, I ask what the hell is wrong with me every day, but that's got nothing to do with this.
If I'm not mistaken, it's spina bifida. What the hell? That's an easy diagnosis. Oh, man.
We have fun, don't we?
Yes, we do. Nate, as always, man, a great conversation. I'm always happy to come on and shoot it around, you know?
You've been coming on kind of more often lately.
That's because I'm bored. I got nothing to do. You're not going to find me taking my canes and hopping in a boat and going fishing. You're not going to find me getting up in the morning and running for exercise.
You've still been working more than I have.
Well, that's true. But you're not going to find me out and about unless it's absolutely necessary. That's the other thing. We can look at an episode in the future about socializing as a disabled person.
Oh, yeah.
Something to think about. I love you, man. And you know I'm here for you anytime.
Love you back, man. And I really want to thank you once again. I wouldn't say being the inspiration for this week's show, but being a big part of it. Thanks also to Ed Tobias. Our conversation about Disability Pride Month wouldn't have been the same without him. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and join our Discord server. Links will be in the description. Until next week, this is Nate Lurie saying, you don't always have to do a lot to inspire others.